Part 3, The Talents and Faculties of the New Man. Part 3, Chapter 1, Auric Rebirth. The time has come to introduce to you the coming new man. In the two preceding parts of this book, the various philosophical and internal aspects of this new human genesis have been outlined, but the age, which is now shining in the tender light of morning, is the dawn of a day in which the new human being will act, move, and be. If we do not belong to those who are earthbound in the grey veils of dialectics, we shall undoubtedly recognize the signature of this new man and be able to determine his reappearance in the history of the world from the year 1952 onwards. What was revealed in this Aryan age thousands of years ago through the divine brotherhoods, through the sacred work of Ikhnaton in Egypt, and the great workers of India, by Lao Tzu in China, by Zoroaster in the Chaldean Empire, by Mani in the Middle East, what entered Greece with Plato and Pythagoras, and shone in Western Europe through the Druids and the work of the Cathars, will once again shine in this dark world order. The day of the new man has arrived. The aurora of a new age of the true people of God has once again shattered the armor of dialectics. The chain of seven temples has once again been forged solidly and strongly, and it has invincibly begun a work that can rightly be called the labor of total pupilship. The work of renewal has begun, the paths of renova are being trodden. You will understand that going a path in the particular sense we mean presupposes taking leave and travelling with us. There are pupils who wholeheartedly and entirely from within wish to travel with us. Others are still full of doubt, and there are perhaps some who, without entirely realizing it, are full of rejection and criticism. We have attempted to help them, but they have proved unwilling. So the hour of farewell has now come. The aurora of a new day crowns the paths we have chosen. We are leaving the night, and another task awaits us. The words spoken now and in the future apply only to those who travel with us, and only for them do they have power. You will recall that the power of Gnostic renewal, which can be absorbed via the permanent atom, will ultimately shine from the ascending left sympathetic nerve strand after a long journey, which we have discussed in detail. When this radiation fullness reveals itself, it is proof that a new magnetic circulation has been formed in the heart of the microcosm, which corresponds with the body of the nature of death. This extraordinary birth concerns the circulation of pure Gnostic powers in the body of the old nature, i.e., the development of a new nerve stream, which, as we stated, will cause a change in the blood and the nerve fluid. The effects of the head, heart, and pelvic sanctuaries and of the endocrine system will be changed, and gradually an entirely different system of lines of force will be formed, outwardly in the image of the ordinary personality, but infused and irradiated with completely different life streams springing from the new source of consciousness in the sympathicus. A new temple arises, a threefold temple of consciousness, soul and body. A material body not in the gross shape of dialectical nature, but in the refined appearance of an entirely new nature. A glorified new personality, including a material bodily form. With this new vehicle, the candidate must go out and be caught up in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. The voyage on which we have now embarked concerns, among other things, the construction of this new vehicle of the Ark, the ship of heaven which we require to reach our goal. Clearly, we must now discuss and study in detail which dimensions and materials our vehicle requires and which tools will ensure success. Our fellow travellers will understand that the workshop must first be ready, the workshop in which the hammer blows must fall, where the T-square and gauge can be wielded without malfunction, and where the slipway must be cleared so that the ship of heaven may soon be entrusted without incident to the new sea of the fullness of life. What else can the workshop be than the precise center of our microcosm, our body, our material form? We know this material form to be undivine, derived from the nature of death. For this reason, the core of this form, its fundamental principle, must above all be destroyed. This is why, on the basis of various details from the second letter of Peter, we so extensively discussed the seven prerequisites to the path. Only when you fulfill these conditions will your workshop be ready. Only then can you build. First, the new magnetic circulation must be brought about through the sympathicus. This is in no way a tour de force for a permanent atom entity. Whoever gives himself to the path in absolute self-surrender and accepts the consequences undoubtedly prepares his workshop for new building. And the proof of this readiness is furnished by the new fluid of the sympathicus manifesting itself. This fluid is the stone which must be used for building. It is the supreme remedy, the true elixir of life of the myths, the open sesame of fairy tales. This fluid is the flame of the seventh condition fulfilled, the light of divine love. Only with this love only can the work be commenced and completed. We must properly understand that it is senseless and in fact quite wrong to sentimentalize and to wax poetic about this divine love. Whoever speaks about it must speak with deeds, with the concrete facts of building. This is what is required of us. What is called love in the universal doctrine is the primal substance of the divine flame of the world soul. When the light of this flame begins to burn in the new magnetic circuit, the candidate will be able to bear all things with this love, as Paul says, and according to Peter's words, he will be able to cover a multitude of sins. We wish to explain to you what Paul and Peter meant by these words. In the famous 13th chapter of his first letter to the Corinthians, Paul says that he who breathes in the primal substance of the divine flame is on a road leading to liberation. He speaks to his pupils and says, though we should direct our attention to the most cultivated entities of the dialectical field of life, and though we should command, as do they, the art of rhetoric to perfection, and thus speak or write a tongue in the highest attainable fashion, and though we should likewise climb to the pinnacle of magic and intellectual knowledge, and command all the arts of prophecy, of the secret truths of salvation, and of the sciences, we should be like a clanging cymbal and be absolutely nothing if we did not have the primal substance of the divine flame. And Paul proceeds to enumerate the possibilities revealing themselves for every candidate once he becomes a partaker of this glory. He says, love bears all things, it does not rejoice at wrong, and in the same sphere, we wish to add Peter's words. Love covers a multitude of sins. Peter's words, love covers a multitude of sins. If asked for an explanation of these words, people would generally point to a new moral and ethical mode of behavior, which both Paul and Peter seemingly require. Mystical outpourings would undoubtedly ensue, and all would think of the highest forms of love known in our natural order, of self-sacrificing and conciliatory deeds, and of associating with people who excel in those deeds. Are you aware, however, that the apostles quoted here did not in the least intend these supreme manifestations of the dialectical human emotional life? They considered the human race's ordinary effusions of love beautiful, noble, and useful, as do we, and as balm for a lacerated soul. But 1 Corinthians 13 emphatically refers to something quite different. We must understand the true nature of these things in order to be able totally to grasp current pupilship, both rationally and in realization. And at the same time, we will come to understand what Paul means in the other chapters of this letter to the Corinthians by the gifts of tongues and prophecy. You will perhaps be aware that this world is full of tongue movements, apostolic and Pentecostal, claiming to practice these gifts. It is highly tragic that the unmistakable searching of tens of thousands of people has become stranded in spiritistic, negative, occult, mediumistic pursuits. Ignorance is the cause of this calamity, these people having fallen prey to reflection sphere brotherhoods who, for obvious purposes, imitate holy life. If you cannot see through these motives, let it be said that all those gifts spoken of by Paul, gifts which are extremely real in a true spiritual school, are the first signature, the first evidence of a new human genesis. If one imitates that signature, that evidence, in a purely dialectical and absolutely negative manner, one leaves a whole stream of deeply serious seekers stranded in a desert. This outright betrayal of the 19th century is about to be unmasked. Throughout the whole world, the gifts and attributes of the new man will become known, not only philosophically, but also practically, and in such a way as to clearly demonstrate the unbridgeable gulf between imitation and reality. Innumerable misguided seekers will thereby turn to the spiritual school to find the lost trail back and to proceed with us from power to power and glory to glory. And thus, proof will be given that the gnosis has truly come. When a pupil has fulfilled the seven conditions to the path, organically partaking in the gnosis, and the new magnetic circuit in the sympathicus therefore becomes active, then the new radiation emanating from it will come to cover the pupil's whole being, his personality, his respiration field, the auric being, and the magnetic field. This cloud of the Lord will envelop the microcosm of the candidate like a cloak, and the results will be almost unbelievable. A great diversity of gifts and new attributes will reveal themselves, all evolving from one and the same sanctifying spirit of renewal. All the magnetic points in the auric being wholly attuned to dialectical life and its aeons will progressively be extinguished in that cloak of divine love, and new lights will be ignited. This love radiation will thus practically and directly cover a multitude of sins. So, this process of divine love extinguishes karma. It does not merely cover karma in a negative sense so that it still continues to exist, but replaces it absolutely. Here again, we have an error in translation, for the original word for cover can also be translated as replace. The original translators of the Bible were unable to comprehend that love is able to replace sin, and for that reason translated the word as cover, which did mean something to them. We hope, however, that the divine meaning of this word will now be clear in the light of the foregoing. The magnetic system of the auric being is utterly engulfed by this divine flame. The dialectical firmament is extinguished and a new firmament takes shape. A new microcosmic earth, a transfigured personality, will and must now reveal itself under this new heaven. In the first instance, its signature is a multitude of new gifts and possibilities, the signature of the coming new man. We shall now speak to you in detail about this and advise you thoroughly to study chapters 12, 13, 14 and 15 of the first letter to the Corinthians, as our observations are based on them.